This is Audible.
Ziggurat Productions proudly presents Third Ear Radio Theater. And now, a sci-fi classic, I'm in Marsport Without Hilda, written by one of the most famous and prolific of all science fiction writers, Isaac Asimov, and featuring Jim Gallant as the storyteller. Produced, engineered, sound effects, and original music written and performed by Bob E. Flick. Drums and percussion performed by the cosmic rhythm master Conan, with sound design and sonic soundscape imagery created by Biondo. This production was recorded at the Audio Art Recording Studios in Topanga, California, with Commander Audio at the helm. And now, Isaac Asimov's I'm in Marsport Without Hilda. It worked itself out to begin with like a dream. I didn't have to make any arrangement. I didn't have to touch it. I just watched things work out. Maybe that's when I should have first smelled catastrophe. It began with my usual month's layoff between assignments. A month on and a month off is the right and proper routine for the Galactic Service. I reached Marsport for the usual 3-day layover before the short hop to Earth. Ordinarily, Hilda, God bless her, as sweet a wife as any man ever had, would be there waiting for me. And we'd have a nice sedate time of it, a nice little interlude for the two of us. The only trouble with that is that Marsport is the rowdiest spot in the system, and a nice little interlude isn't exactly what fits in. Only, how do I explain that to Hilda, eh? Well, this time, my mother-in-law, God bless her, for a change, got sick. Just 2 days before I reached Marsport, and the night before landing, I got a spacegram from Hilda saying she would stay on Earth with her mother and wouldn't meet me this one time. I grammed back my loving regrets and my feverish anxiety concerning her mother, and when I landed, there I was. I was in Marsport without Hilda. That was still nothing, you understand. It was the frame of the picture, the bones of the woman. Now there was the matter of the lines and coloring inside the frame, the skin and flesh outside the bones. So I called up Flora. Flora of certain rare episodes in the past, and for the purpose I used a video booth. Damn the expense, full speed ahead. I was giving myself 10-to-1 odds she'd be out, she'd be busy with her video phone disconnected, she'd be dead even. But she was in, with her video phone connected, and great galaxy, was she anything but dead? She looked better than ever. Age cannot wither, as somebody or other once said, nor custom stale her infinite variety. Was she glad to see me? She squealed. Max, it's been years. I know, Flora, but this is it, if you're available. Because guess what? I'm in Marsport without Hilda. She squealed again. Isn't that nice? Then come on over. I goggled a bit. This was too much. You mean you are available? You have to understand that Flora was never available without plenty of notice. Well, she was that kind of a knockout. She said, Oh, I've got some quibbling little arrangement, Max, but I'll take care of that. You come on over. I'll come, I said happily. Flora was the kind of girl, well, I tell you. She had her rooms under Martian gravity, 0.4 Earth normal. The gadget to free her of Marsport's pseudo-grav field was expensive, of course, but if you've ever held a girl in your arms at 0.4 Gs, you need no explanation. If you haven't, explanations will do no good. I'm also sorry for you. Talk about floating on clouds. I closed connections, and only the prospect of seeing it all in the flesh could have made me wipe out the image with such alacrity. I stepped out of the booth. And at that point, that precise point, that very split instant of time, the first whiff of catastrophe nudged itself up to me. That first whiff was the bald head of the lousy Raj Crinton of the Mars offices, gleaming over a head full of pale blue eyes, pale yellow complexion, and pale brown mustache. I didn't bother getting on all fours and beating my forehead against the ground because my vacation had started the minute I had gotten off the ship. So I said with only normal politeness, "What do you want?" And "I'm in a hurry. I've got an appointment." He said, "You've got an appointment with me. I was waiting for you at the unloading desk." I said, "I didn't see you." He said, "You didn't see anything." He was right at that. For come to think of it, if he was at the unloading desk, he must have been spinning ever since, because I went past that desk like Halley's Comet skimming the solar corona. I said, "All right. What do you want?" "I've got a little job for you." I laughed. "It's my month off, friend." He said, "Red emergency alert, friend." Which meant no vacation. Just like that. I couldn't believe it. I said, "Nuts, Raj. Have a heart. I got an emergency alert of my own." "Nothing like this." "Raj," I yelled, "can't you get someone else? Anyone else?" "You're the only Class A agent on Mars." "Well, send to Earth, then. They stack agents like micropile units at headquarters. This has got to be done before 11 p.m. "What's the matter? You haven't got 3 hours?" I grabbed my head. The boy just didn't know. I said, "Let me make a call, will you?" I stepped back into the booth, glared at him, and said, "Private." Flora shone on the screen again, like a mirage on an asteroid. She said, "Something wrong, Max?" "Don't say something's wrong. I canceled my other engagement." I said, "Flora, baby, I'll be there. I'll be there. But something's come up." She asked the natural question in a hurt tone of voice, and I said, "No, not another girl. With you in the same town, they don't make any other girls. Females, maybe. Not girls. Baby. Honey." I had a wild impulse, but hugging vision screen is no pastime for a grown man. "It's business. Just hold on. It won't take long." She said, "All right." But she said it kind of like it was just enough not all right so that I got the shivers. I stepped out of the booth and said, "All right, Raj, what kind of mess have you cooked up for me?"
"The white zone is for the immediate loading and unloading of spacecrafts only. Attention, Bob Goldberg, Paul Lewin, and Bob Flick. Report to security headquarters immediately for questioning concerning the Earth Island shipping containers. Now boarding flight 2155 to Jupiter, gate 11A.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, for one night only, straight from the moons of Jupiter, Conan, the Cosmic Rhythm Master, with his band, the Star Crusaders.
We went into the spaceport bar and got us an insulated booth. He said, "The Antares Giant is coming in from Sirius in exactly half an hour at 8 p.m. local time. Okay, three men will get out, among others, and will wait for the Space Eater coming in from Earth at 11 p.m. and leaving for Capella sometime thereafter. The three men will get on the Space Eater and will then be out of our jurisdiction. So between 8 and 11, they'll be in a special waiting room, and you'll be with them. I have a trimensional image of each for you, so you'll know which they are and which is which. You have between 8 and 11 to decide which one of the three is carrying contraband." "What kind of contraband?" "The worst kind. Altered spacealine." "Altered spacealine?" He had thrown me. I knew what spacealine was. If you've been on a space op, you know too. And in case you're earthbound yourself, the bare fact is that everyone needs it on the first space trip. Almost everybody needs it for the first dozen trips. Lots need it every trip. Without it, there is vertigo associated with free fall, screaming, terrors, semi-permanent psychoses. With it, there is nothing. No one minds a thing. And it isn't habit-forming. It has no adverse side effects. Spacealine is ideal, essential, unsubstitutable. When in doubt, take spacealine." Rod said, "That's right. Altered spacealine. It can be changed chemically by a very simple reaction that can be conducted in anyone's basement into a drug that will give one giant-sized charge and become your baby blue habit the first time. It is on a par with the most dangerous alkaloids we know." "And we just found out about it?" "No. The service has known about it for years. And we've kept others from knowing by squashing every discovery flat. Only now the discovery's gone too far." "In what way?" "One of the men who will be stopping over at this spaceport is carrying some of the altered spacealine on his person. Chemists in the Capellian system, which is outside the Federation, will analyze it and set up ways of synthesizing more. After that, it's either fight the worst drug menace we've ever seen, or suppress the matter by suppressing the source." "You mean spacealine?" "Right. And if we suppress spacealine, we suppress space travel." I decided to put my finger on the point. "Which one of the three has it?" Rod smiled nastily. "If we knew, would we need you? You're to find out which of the three." "You're calling on me for a lousy frisk job?" "Touch the wrong one at the risk of a haircut down to the larynx. Every one of the three's a big man on his own planet. One is Edward Harpenaster. One is Joaquin Lipsky. And one is Angelo Ferrucci." "Well, he was right. I've heard of every one of them. Chances are you have too, and not one was touchable without proof in advance, as you know." I said, "Would one of them touch a dirty deal like..." "There are trillions involved," said Raj. "Which means any one of the three would. And one of them is, because Jack Hawk got that far before he was killed." "Jack Hawk's dead?" For a minute, I forgot about the galactic drug menace. For a minute, I nearly forgot about Flora. "Right. And one of those guys arranged a killing. Now you find out which. You put the finger on the right one before 11, and there's a promotion, a raise in pay, a payback for poor Jack Hawk, and a rescue of the galaxy. You put the finger on the wrong one, and there'll be a nasty interstellar situation, and you'll be out on your ear, and also on every blacklist from here to Antares and back." I said, "Suppose I don't finger anybody. That would be like fingering the wrong one as far as the service is concerned." I've got to finger someone, but only the right one, or my head's handed to me. In thin slices. You're beginning to understand me, Max. In a long lifetime of looking ugly, Raj Crittenden had never looked uglier. The only comfort I got out of staring at him was the realization that he was married, too, and that he lived with his wife in Marsport all year round. And does he deserve that? Maybe I'm hard on him, but he deserves it. I put in a quick call to Flora as soon as Raj was out of sight. She said, "Well?" I said, "Baby, honey, it's something I can't talk about, but I've got to do it, see? Now you hang on, I'll get it over with. If I have to swim the Grand Canal to the ice cap in my underwear, see? If I have to claw Phobos out of the sky. If I have to cut myself in pieces and mail myself parcel post." "Gee," she said. If I thought I was going to have to wait, I winced. She just wasn't the type to respond to poetry. Actually, she was a simple creature of action. But after all, if I was going to be drifting through low gravity in a sea of jasmine perfume with Flora, poetry response is not the type of qualification I would consider most indispensable. I said urgently, "Just hold on, Flora. I won't be any time at all. I'll make it up to you." I was annoyed, sure, but I wasn't worried as yet. Raj hadn't more than left me when I figured out exactly how I was going to tell the guilty man from the others. It was easy. I should have called Raj back and told him, but there's no law against wanting egg in your beer and oxygen in your air. It would take me 5 minutes, and then off I would go to Flora. A little late, maybe, but with a promotion, a raise, and a slobbering kiss from the service on each cheek. You see, it's like this. Big industrialists don't go space-hopping much. They use trans-video reception. When they do go to some ultra-high interstellar conference, as these three were probably going, they take spacoline. For one thing, they don't have enough hops under their belt to risk doing without. For another, spacoline is the expensive way of doing it. And industrialists do things the expensive way. I know their psychology. Now, that would hold for two of them. The one who carried contraband, however, couldn't risk spacoline, even to prevent space sickness. Under spacoline influence, he could throw the drug away, or give it away, or talk gibberish about it. He would have to stay in control of himself. It was as simple as that. So I waited. Antares Giant was on time, and I waited with my leg muscles tense for a quick takeoff as soon as I collared the murdering, drug-toting rat and sped the two eminent captains of industry on their way. They brought in Lipsky first. He had thick, ruddy lips, rounded jowls, very dark eyebrows, and graying hair. He just looked at me and sat down. Nothing. He was under spacoline. I said, "Good evening, sir." He said in a dreamy voice,
"Surrealist must have Panama hearts in three-quarter time for a cup of coffee dumb up speech."
I was spacoline all the way. The buttons in the human mind were set free swing. Each syllable suggests the next in free association. Andiamo Ferrucci came in next. Black mustache, long and waxed, olive complexion, pockmarked face. He took a seat in another chair facing us. I said, "Nice trip." He said, "Drip the light, fantastic talk, the clock is crowings on the bird." Lipsky said,
"Bird to the wise, guidebook to all, places everybody."
I grinned. And that left Harpinaster. I had my needle gun neatly palmed out of sight and the magnetic coil ready to grip him. And then Harpinaster came in. He was thin, leathery, near bald, and rather younger than he seemed in his tridimensional image. And he was spacaline to the gills. I said, "Damn." Harpenaster said, "Damn Yankee, note speech to his last time I saw, would you say so?" Ferrucci said, "So the seed, the territory under dispute, do well to come along long road to a nightingale." Lipsky said, "Gay lords hopping pong balls." I stared from one to the other as the nonsense ran down in shorter and shorter spurts, and then silence. I got the picture all right. One of them was faking. He had thought ahead and realized that omitting the spacaline would be a giveaway. He might have bribed an official into injecting saline or dodged it some other way. One of them must be faking. It wasn't hard to fake the thing. Comedians on Subetheric had a spacaline skit regularly. You've heard them. I stared at them and got the first prickle at the base of my skull that said, "What if you don't finger the right one?" It was 8:30, and there was my job, my reputation, my head growing rickety upon my neck to be considered. I saved it all for later and thought of Flora. She wasn't going to wait for me forever. For that matter, chances were she wouldn't wait for half an hour. I wondered, could the faker keep up free association if nudged gently onto dangerous territory? I said, "The floor is covered with a nice solid rug," and ran the last two words together to make it solid drug. Lipsky said, "Drug, from underneath the do-re-mi-fa-sol to be saved." Ferrucci said, "Saved in a haircut above the common, heard something about unicorny as a harmonic and the cheek by razor and shine." Harpenaster said, "Shiner wind nor snow use trying to buy forever and effervescence and sensibility ter tater." Lipsky said, "Totters and rags." Ferrucci said, "Ragsackly." Harpenaster said, "Acclimation." A few grunts, and they ran down. I tried again, and I didn't forget to be careful. They would remember everything I said afterward, and what I said had to be harmless. I said, "This is a darn good space line." Ferrucci said, "Lions and tigers through the prairie dogs to bark of the bow wow." I interrupted, looking at Harpenaster. "A darn good space line. Line the bed and rest a little black sheepishian of wrong the close of a perfect day." I interrupted again, glaring at Lipsky. "Good space line. Lyron is hot chocolate ain't gonna be the same on UV and double the steaks and potatoes and heal." Someone else said, "Heal the sickness serried and right will win stands. Dance with mealtime."
"I'm comingo."
"English." "Easter seals." "Eels." I tried a few more times and got nowhere. The faker, whichever he was, had practiced or had natural talents at talking free association. He was disconnecting his brain and letting the words come out any old way. And he must be inspired by knowing exactly what I was after. If drug hadn't given it away, spaceline, three times repeated, must have. I was safe for the other two. But he would know, and he was having fun with me. All three were saying phrases that might have pointed to a deep inner guilt. Soul to be saved. Little black Shapishian of wrong. Drug from underneath, and so on. Two were saying such things helplessly, randomly. The third was amusing himself. So how did I find the third? I was in a feverish thrill of hatred against him, and my fingers twitched. The rat was subverting the galaxy. More than that, he had killed my colleague and friend. More than that, he was keeping me from Flora. I could go up to each one of them and start searching. The two who were really under space lane would make no move to stop me. They could feel no emotion, no fear, no anxiety, no hate, no passion, no desire for self-defense. And if one made the slightest gesture of resistance, I would have my man. But the innocent ones would remember afterward. They would remember a personal search while under spacaline. I sighed. If I tried it, I would get the criminal all right. But later, I would be the nearest thing to chopped liver any man had ever been. There would be a shake-up in the service, a big stink the width of the galaxy. And in the excitement and disorganization, the secret of altered spacaline would get out anyway. And so what the hell? Of course, the one I wanted might be the first one I touched. One chance out of three. I'd have one out, and only God could make a three. Nuts! Something had started them going while I was muttering to myself. And spacaline is contagious to gigolo my... Oh, I stared desperately at my watch, and my line of sight focused on 9:15. Where the devil was time going to? Oh my, oh nuts! Oh, Flora. I had no choice. I made my way to the booth for another quick call to Flora. Just a quick one, you understand, to keep things alive, assuming they weren't dead already. I kept saying to myself, she won't answer. I tried to prepare myself for that. There were other girls. What's the use? There were no other girls. If Hilda had been in Marsport, I never would have had Flora on my mind in the first place, and it wouldn't have mattered. But I was in Marsport, without Hilda. And I had made a date with Flora. The signal was signaling, and I didn't dare break off. Answer! Answer! She answered. She said, "It's you." Of course, sweetheart, who else would it be? Lots of people. Someone who would come. There's just this little detail of business, honey. What business? Plastance for who? I almost corrected her grammar, but I was too busy wondering what this Plastance kick was. Then I remembered. I told her once I was a Plastance salesman. That was the time I brought her a Plastance nightgown that was a honey. I said, "Look, just give me another half hour." Her eyes grew moist.
"I'm sitting here, all by myself."
"I'll make it up to you." To show you how desperate I was getting, I was definitely beginning to think along paths that could lead only to jewelry, even though a sizable dent in the bank book would show up to Hilda's piercing eye, like the house-head nebula interrupting the Milky Way. But then I was desperate. She said, "I had a perfectly good date, and I broke it off." I protested. "You said it was a quibbling little arrangement." That was a mistake. I knew it the minute I said it. She shrieked, "Quibbling little arrangement!" It was what she had said. But having the truth on your side just makes it worse in arguing with a woman. Don't I know? "You call a man who's promised me an estate on Earth?" She went on and on about that estate on Earth. There wasn't a gal in Marsport who wasn't wangling for an estate on Earth, and you could count the number who got one on the sixth finger of either hand. I tried to stop her. No use. She finally said, "And here I am, all alone, with nobody." Then broke off contact. Well, she was right. I felt like the lowest heel in the galaxy. I went back into the reception room. A flunky outside the door saluted me in. I stared at the three industrialists and speculated on the order in which I would slowly choke each to death if I could but receive choking orders. Harpenaster first, maybe. He had a thin, stringy neck that the fingers could go round neatly and a sharp Adam's apple against which the thumbs could find purchase. It cheered me up infinitesimally to the point where I muttered, "Boy!" just out of sheer longing. Though it was no boy I was longing for. It started them off at once. Ferrucci said, "Boy, the water and the spout, you go teeming rain over us. God save your pennies." Harpenaster of the scrawny neck added, "Knees and nephew don't like or poor rally cat." Lipsky said, "Cattle corral, go down off a ductile tease, drunk."
"Drunky, aunt. Interior passage, wait a while."
"Wild beast, so pray." "Pray to his crow."
"Grow way."
"Waiter."
"Durable."
"Bull."
Then nothing. They stared at me. I stared at them. They were empty of emotion, or two were, and I was empty of ideas. And time passed. I stared at them some more and thought about Flora. It occurred to me that I had nothing to lose, that I had not already lost. I might as well talk about her. I said, "Gentlemen, there is a girl in this town whose name I will not mention for fear of compromising her. Let me describe her to you, gentlemen." And I did. If I say so myself, the last 2 hours had honed me to such a fine force field edge that the description of Flora took on a kind of poetry that seemed to be coming from some wellspring of masculine force deep in the sub-basement of my unconscious. And they sat frozen, almost as though they were listening and hardly ever interrupting. People under Spacelene have a kind of politeness about them. They won't speak when someone else is speaking. That's why they take turns. I kept it up with a kind of heartfelt sadness in my voice until the loudspeaker announced in stirring tones the arrival of the Space Eater. That was that. I said in a loud voice, "Rise, gentlemen!" "Not you, you murderer." And my magnetic coil was on Ferrucci's wrist before he could breathe twice. Ferrucci fought like a demon. He was under no Spacelene influence. They found the altered Spacelene in thin, flesh-colored plastic pads hugging the inner surface of his thighs. You couldn't see it at all. You could only feel it, and even then it took a knife to make sure. Afterward, Rog Crenton, grinning and half insane with relief, held me by the lapel with a death grip. "How did you do it? What gave it away?" I said, trying to pull loose. One of them was faking a Spacelene jag. I was sure of it. So I told them. I grew cautious. None of his business as to the details, you know. About a girl. See, and two of them never reacted. So they were Spacelened. But Ferrucci's breathing speeded up and the beads of sweat came out on his forehead. I gave a pretty dramatic rendition and he reacted. So he was under no Spacelene. "Now, will you let me go?" He let go, and I almost fell over backward. I was set to take off. My feet were pawing the ground without any instruction from me, but then I turned back. "Hey, Raj," I said, "can you sign me a chit for 1,000 credits without its going on the record for services rendered to the service?" That's when I realized he was half insane with relief and very temporary gratitude, because he said, "Sure, Max, sure. 10,000 credits if you want." "I want," I said, grabbing him for a change. "I want, I want." He filled out an official service chit for 10,000 credits, good as cash anywhere in half the galaxy. He was actually grinning as he gave it to me, and you can bet I was grinning as I took it. How he intended accounting for it was his affair. The point was that I wouldn't have to account for it to Hilda. I stood in the booth one last time, signaling Flora. I didn't dare let matters go till I reached her place. The additional half hour might just give her time to get someone else, if she hadn't already. "Make her answer. Make her answer. Make her..." She answered, but she was in formal clothes. She was going out, and I had obviously caught her by 2 minutes. "I am going out," she announced. "Some men can be decent. And I do not wish to see you in the henceforward. I do not wish ever to find my eyes upon you. You will do me a great favor, Mr. Whoever you are, if you unhand my signal combination and never pollute it with..." I wasn't saying anything. I was just standing there, holding my breath, and also holding the chit up where she could see it. Just standing there, just holding. Sure enough, at the word pollute, she came in for a closer look. She wasn't much in education, that girl, but she could read 10,000 credits faster than any college graduate in the solar system. She said, "Max, for me?" "All for you, baby," I said. "I told you I had a little business to do. I wanted to surprise you." "Oh, Max, that's sweet of you. I didn't really mind. I was joking. Now you come right here to me." She took off her coat. "What about your date?" I said. "I said I was joking," she said. "I'm coming," I said faintly. "With every single one of those credits now," she said roguishly. "With every single one," I said. I broke contact, stepped out of the booth, and now finally I was set. Set! I heard my name called. "Max! Max!" Someone was running toward me. Rog Critton said I would find you here. Mama's all right after all, so I got special passage on the Space Eater. And what's this about 10,000 credits? I didn't turn. I said, "Hello, Hilda." And then I turned and did the hardest thing I ever succeeded in doing in all my good-for-nothing space-hopping life. I managed to smile. Ziggurat Productions has proudly presented Third Ear Radio Theater with its production of I'm in Marsport Without Hilda, written by Isaac Asimov, with Jim Gallant as the storyteller, produced, engineered, sound effects, and original music written and performed by Bob E. Flick, drums and percussion performed by the Cosmic Rhythm Master Conan, sound design and sonic soundscape imagery created by Beyondo. Recorded at Audio Art Recording Studios in Topanga, California, with Commander Audio at the helm. Be sure to look for more third-year radio theater stories from Ziggurat Productions, including science fiction, adventure, and mysteries, available at your favorite CD and DVD stores. Also, visit our website at www.ziggurat-productions.com, where you'll find the magic of old-time radio and the finest audio movies in the known universe.
This is Bob Flick, producer of Ziggurat Productions. I'd like to thank my friends Jim Gallant and Mary Patterson for all their help and support with this production. So, until worlds collide, we've got all the time in the world.
Now boarding flight 2155 to Jupiter, gate 11A.
We'll be right back. Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.